Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjees. I'm Svetlana.
And I'm Ben.
In season 2, we will be traveling around the globe, out of Switzerland, and bring amazing leaders from businesses, thought leaders, political leaders, of course, investors and experts.
We're working at implementing and realizing all the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, better known as SDGs.
And they are also making profit.
Hello, I am Amina Gurib-Fakim, and I'm the sixth president of the Republic of Mauritius.
My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation.
I'm Michael Lichtenstein. I'm an entrepreneur here in Lichtenstein. I'm running on one side of a financial services company.
You know, hundreds of deals a month, we are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing.
So join us to discover impact investing ecosystem.
See you every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time at Swiss Impact with Banerjees.
See you on Friday. Act with impact.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone. And from the VOS and Far East, good night.
Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjees, season 2, week 2. And we started more than 3 months ago, for those who are watching us for the first time, and already broadcasted in 122 countries. You can watch us on different channels like IBM TV, Camomile, and YouTube.
So in this program, we are talking to global leaders, thought leaders, policymakers, experts, academics on the topic of impact investment and impactful businesses. And moreover, our task is to convert the unconverted by showing transformative journey of completely non-sustainable or partially sustainable companies into sustainable companies by taking actions and incorporate impact or SDGs in their business models so that it generates positive impact.
That's amazing. Sounds great for me. So, Ben, shall we continue our tradition and start with your great stories? Hopefully, it will be not too depressing this time.
No. So, this time, last week, this was a document produced by the United Kingdom-based Cambridge Sustainability Commission on scaling behavioral changes. It mentions that the world's wealthiest must radically change their lifestyle to tackle the climate change, a report says. It also says that the world's wealthiest 1% produce double the combined carbon emission of the poorest 50%, according to the UN. So in other words, the wealthiest 5% alone, so-called the polluter elite, contributed 37% of the emission growth from 1990 to 2015. There is often a counter argument which is said by the critics that if you have a technological advancement, if the better and better technologies come, then this will work.
Isn't it like that?
No, unfortunately not. That's what the report says. It's unfortunately not like that. It can only happen if a lot of strict policies are implemented by the government. And of course, these will be unpopular policies. But the lead author of this report, Professor Peter Neville from Sussex University, said technological improvements will help, but we still need drastic policy changes. As also the conclusion was also of the report, the report is called Growth Positive Zero Emission Pathway in 2050. Anybody is interested, they can Google it and and download the report.
And what about climate justice?
That's exactly the term which is coming out more and more often. We had it at our guest also the previous, one of the previous guests, Professor Dr. Farib Guhim from the president of Mauritius, who also mentioned that this term is coming more and more because the poorer nations, which contribute relatively far lesser carbon, are going to pay ever increasing more and more damage. While on other hand, countries like United States, China, and EU, and often most of the industries financed by the Western financial institutions and investors, are the cause of the majority of the climate or environmental damage.
So maybe we should start a new practice called naming and shaming, as everyone is talking. So yeah, some big corporations, some big banks. What if we name them? How about that? Because slowly we are running out of time and talking about action. Maybe we should just act and yeah, for the sake of our generation. What do you think about that idea?
I completely agree, because this, and funnily, it has already started. Our guest last week from UNDP mentioned that they are already charting it, companies and organizations. I come, as most of you or many of you know, I come from Netherlands. Very funnily, there was a report. Yes. in Netherlands, that apparently the pension funds from West Europe, including Netherlands, and other major financial institutions of the Western governments have been the biggest, or they are nearly 30% responsible for the deforestation, whether it is Amazon or Indonesia. So these funds have been seriously, so whatever the government is doing to reduce the CO2 emission, all that, these funds are doing rather quite opposite. Their investments are going to these companies which are causing the damage.
Again, which pension fund? Can you name them?
Then you have to read the Dutch news, and these pension funds are, so the naming and shaming is slowly coming. So the regulations are getting stricter, although not yet in the speed that one would expect it to be.
But maybe for the newcomers, let me really quickly say what is impact investing. Yeah. For those who are new here, so we refer in impact investing to investments into innovative companies which generate not only positive social and environmental impact, but also financial return. And it is not philanthropy, it is not charity, it is also not sustainable investing, right? So we are here in the middle, in between, and which we see the future actually in these impactful businesses which generate both positive impact and returns.
And can you tell us something about the course?
About the course, of course, yes. For those who want to learn and transform their businesses, existing one, or create new ones, which again will generate both social and environmental impact and financial returns, we organize a course every month, sometimes several times per month. So keep updated. It's called Profitable Businesses Impact. Maybe make a snapshot of this. Go to chamomile.ch or at our impactinvestingschool.com. And at this course, we'll teach you not only how to make this business successful, but also how to get resources such as money and expertise for making your business even more successful and scale it up. So join us on this journey and transform.
And with this, we want to invite our the guest of today. The speaker is Stephen Brennickmeyer. He's, to my knowledge, one of the original impact investors in Europe. He's the founder and principal of Willows Investment, and he's the chairman of European Climate Foundation. Is an internationally known person on the topic of impact investment and climate change.
Yes, and Stephen is not only having interest in climate change, but also impact investing and education. For 30 years, he was involved in family-held retail business. I'm sure every one of you knows CNA in USA, Japan, England, and throughout Europe, all CNA shops. He has been active in strategic investing since 2002, And in 2008, he created Willows Investment with the aim of supporting promising ventures with social mission. And among his many board positions, which I don't want to name here because otherwise we spend half of the show here, he is also, however, in the board of University Twickenham in UK, and he's also on the board of directors at World Resource Institute. So with this, I invite Stephen, who will show us and help to understand better who is impact investor and what are they doing and what they are looking for. And of course, what is European Climate Foundation and what are the activities? How can you maybe get engaged for that? So welcome, Stephen.
Good afternoon.
Can you hear us? Yes. Welcome. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Can you hear us, Stephen?
Yes, I can hear you very well. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you perfectly.
Great. It's such a pleasure having you with us. Where are you right now? In which country?
I'm in Surrey, in England.
Okay.
So shall we start? So, Stephen, for our global audience, can you tell us a short of your own background and your activities in the sector of impact investment and climate change? And what would help is also if you can tell our audience the brief history and activities of your two organizations, that is the Willow Investments and European Climate Foundation.
Okay. So my background is having worked in the family business for over 30 years. And basically, in around 2002, 2003, I changed my career, became a strategic investor, which then turned out to become impact investment. And because obviously we as a family do a lot in charitable giving. And so at one stage, we thought maybe there's something more in addition to just charitable giving. And so I came up through an organization in Zurich with the idea of microfinance. Obviously, it's not my idea. This is obviously not a situation that has existed for many, many years. But this organization in Zurich called Responsibility was starting a fund for microfinance. And so I helped them to set it up. And so basically, eventually, I served 14 years on their board. And that's not an organization which is probably one of the largest private impact investors globally, and with an asset base of nearly $4 billion. And so it was very helpful and beneficial to work with them, to learn from them, and to also gain my first experience in that space, because obviously I wasn't really an investor. So I really had to learn the hard way. And obviously I made many mistakes. And so I also gained some good results during the course of quite a few years.
Stephen, can we name this organization?
It's called Responsibility.
Ah,
they're based in and obviously they're doing very well. And so it's I'm still working with them on their private equity side, on their board, but not on the main board anymore. After 14 years, I thought it makes sense to move on.
And what does European Climate Foundation do?
So European Climate Foundation is now 10 years old, was founded in 2008, a combination of European and American philanthropists. Actually, in the US in 2006, an American philanthropist created the Energy Foundation, but they found out very quickly that they couldn't just do the climate, mitigation on their own. So they needed a counterpart in Europe. And then they got together and I created the European Climate Foundation. So we're working closely with the Energy Foundation in the US and with many other foundations around the world. So our aim is really to mitigate climate change across Europe. So 80% of our work is European and 20% of our work is global.
And what do you mean by our work?
Our work as a foundation. So for instance, we have a big program where we want to phase out coal by 2030 across Europe. And this campaign is funded specifically through Bloomberg Philanthropies. And we have now ran this campaign since 5 years. And over 50% of all coal energy systems in Europe have been phased out. So I think it is quite successful what we're doing. Yeah. And so we have many, many other programs that we run. And we work with about 300 partners, so they do the work and we help them, guide them, and we fund them.
Okay.
Sounds great.
So let's start with impact investment first.
Yeah, absolutely. And my favorite is the definition, you know, because there's so much misunderstanding as well. Some people are misusing the term. So what is impact investing for you personally? How do you define that?
I think you said it very well at the beginning. When you introduce impact investment.
Do you agree with that definition? Is it something what you can say, yeah, it's okay for me?
Definition. Yeah. And I also would say impact is the measure of an action's benefit to society and the planet. We must shift the center of our consciousness. And I think in today's world, I think particularly when we look at the climate crisis that we're in, and we look at the pandemic that we're in, I think new ways of investing is needed, and I think impact investing is probably one of the very, very creative answers to this.
Well, I'm happy to hear that Stephen accepted my definition. That's great. Thanks a lot. Then please tell us, how did you get involved in that? I mean, you didn't always knew that it exists. So how was your first experience with impact investing? How did you learn about it and get engaged in that?
No, as I said, obviously I helped set up the company Responsibility in Zurich. In those days, impact investment as a term didn't exist. It was much more social investing. And but basically through working with them over all these years, so I made a deal with them. They helped me to set up my own fund. And so we started to do some direct investments in my own fund, made some good investments, made some bad investments, but I also helped them set up their organization. And so basically, gradually, we learned by doing. And so in 2008, I set up Willows Investments as a new fund, new initiative. And through that, I made some very exciting new investments, still being invested in Responsibility, but had investments in Ananda Ventures in Munich, or Bridges Ventures in the UK, or Big Issue Invest also in the UK, and many others.
But is this fund open for public, or it's just for your family?
This is just private. It's just very private.
Private fund, yeah. It's too bad. It would be great to invest with Stephen Brennickmeyer together, you know. And didn't you plan to kind of bring it to public so they would use the same strategy?
You know, the problem is, obviously, if you start accepting money from third parties, then your business model will change.
I know, yes.
You have to serve them and be very, very sort of transactional with your investors. And that's
financial regulation comes into play, of course, and too
that's
much
headache. But through my work, obviously, our own family office, Antos, has also set up their own impact investment fund, and which performs very well.
So when you are investing, what are the criteria you look into in a project?
First of all, very simple. I have to understand the business model that the people do. It has to be part of my values that I want to follow. I have to like it. And so if it fits in, then I'll really check out the management, see whether they actually are are true to their word. You often find people there, they overpromise and underdeliver. And obviously that you learn the hard way. But if I look at Ananda Ventures, for instance, in Munich, they always underpromised and overdelivered. So I think
that's a good one. Under promise and over deliver.
That's good. So and through them, I learned a lot as well. And basically, they brought me a very exciting investment opportunity called Auticon. That is an IT company based actually in Munich. And all our IT consultants have autism and so spectrum. And obviously, it's not a disability, it's a different operating system, as we call it. And we now are probably the largest, let's say, IT autism consultancy globally. We've got over 250 consultants worldwide. We are obviously based in Germany, but we're in France, we're in the UK, we're in Switzerland, we are in Italy, we are in the US, we are in Canada, and we're also in Australia. And the company was founded in 2011. And has really seen remarkable expansion over the last 10 years, which is quite amazing.
Okay,
that's great.
But I heard you mention often that impact, it was mainly your investments were in social projects, but impact investment also consists of environmental projects. Have you also been involved in environmental projects?
Now, lately, obviously, it became much more evident. And there's some wonderful opportunities there. One of my businesses is called Econext, based in Frankfurt. And they have quite a few companies in their portfolio that have very much to do with environmental issues. For instance, one of our companies produces roof tiles, which are solar panels. And so basically, actually, that is a very, very nice way of let's say, creating energy from your own rooftop.
Exactly.
Okay, well, Stephen is fixing the noise. can you Can you tell us another report or something, statistics?
No, no.
Yeah, Stephen is back. Okay, yeah. That's great.
That's not my blogging.
Someone wanted to come in. All right. So in your experience, Stephen, how impact investment changed and evolved in the last two decades? It was not always the same like today. So how did you see the evolvement of this sector?
I think what I've seen is basically that the scale has grown substantially. Mm-hmm. I was a good friend of mine, good colleague, Ronald Cohn. We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. And I remember that we were both at a conference, impact investment conference in the Vatican in 2014. Mm-hmm. And he said at that time, he said he would hope that by 2020, that mm-hmm. impact investments, the industry would have reached about $1 trillion. And when
it's
we
almost spoke, reached, I mean, it's
when we asked again, then he said, actually, I never believed that it would reach $1 trillion, but we are very close.
Uh-huh. So exactly.
It is $1 trillion, but in Australian dollars. Maybe he never said it was Australian.
Oh, but it's amazing. You know him as well. I was once in Netherlands at the conference and could make even a picture with him. His engagement is just awesome. You know, I would recommend to anyone to read his book, Impact Revolution. It's accessible for free. You can download it. And then it's really action oriented. Who must do what in order to make impact investing the new normal? Pension funds, banks, you as a citizens, and so on. So really, Impact Revolution from Sir Ronald Cohen. I recommend it to our audience to get it.
Yesterday, I was on a webinar with IFC, the International Finance Corporation, part of the World Bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they really see themselves as impact investors. And obviously that's quite new, that they actually have really developed their whole way of working as being an impact investor. And obviously they have an investment base of, I think, over $400 billion. So if you add all of that up, and obviously that is really a systemic change. Yep. Also, if you look at KfW, I think also a majority of their investments you can also now classify as impact investment, which obviously hasn't been done 10 years ago, but that is really in development, mm-hmm. which they see and makes a lot of sense. And CDC is the same here, the DFI of the UK. So I think if you add all those numbers up, you mm-hmm. come way over $1 trillion. But okay, mm-hmm. I think Ronald Cohen was very much looking at the private sector, not so much the public sector.
Stephen, what would you say to those who are kind of doing sustainable investing but naming themselves impact investment? How would you message it that they would maybe name what they are doing, what they are really doing as sustainable and impact as impact? So we have some clarity in the industry.
Yeah, I think what is important in these situations that you, how do you measure your impact?
Mm-hmm.
Because we should look at a new paradigm of risk, return, and impact. And so, but then the key is how do you measure that? And it can be measured and can be compared. And for instance, let's shift to measuring outcomes and not only activities.
Outputs
and activities. And so I think, but also sustainable investment, I think probably 8 years ago, IFC would have said, God, we are sustainable investors. But okay, now today they say, no, we are impact investors. So I think there's a lot of movement there. And so I think, measurement is key. People ask me always, how do you measure your impact? And then I just, I'm a very simple mind. So I said, you know, if I look at my Oticon investment, you know, people with autism in many countries are seen as being disabled. And a lot of people can't function properly in the corporate sectors. But obviously we do. We have job coaches, psychologists who work with them once every 2 weeks. They sit down with every individual consultant and see how they're operating and what are the issues and are they getting on well, etc. And then also once these consultants, these job coaches go into their businesses where these people work and talk to their co-workers and also the line managers. to make sure that they're well understood and well embedded. And obviously that is quite new,
right?
Because mm-hmm. there are many people outside of Auticon who've got autism and who work in corporate sectors, but very often they can't cope because they're not understood. They're going to be difficult, you know, they'll be awkward people, you know, and so we have developed quite a good way of managing that. And that I call massive impact, because people are mm-hmm. earning proper money. They've got a proper job. We don't compete on disability. We compete on excellence. So right. with MG and Accenture and everybody in that space. So our USP is excellence and not disability.
Mm-hmm. And are you still hiring? I mean, maybe someone is watching us. So you plan to expand in other countries, your business model with Impact.
So for us, the growth market is the US. We've got now mm-hmm. offices in the US. And I think we're going to really see a marked growth there. We've got two offices here in the UK, one in Edinburgh for NatWest or Royal Bank of Scotland, and mm-hmm. one in London. We've got two offices in Paris, in France, one in Paris and one in Toulouse. And Toulouse mm-hmm. because of Airbus. Mm-hmm. So clients really want our consultants to come to them.
Right. Just one more point, Ben, and then you can go with me, because I know you want to talk. Just one thing, because I just had an idea, you know, if someone would come from, I don't know, from Russia or from another country, India, and say, look, we also want to have your business model in our country. Like, would you help them to scale or like kind of franchise? How would this work? You know, because it's not reinventing the wheel, it's so important. We don't have much time to go through the same thing again. If it's already working, how can you then scale, or would you do something like that?
Yeah, but often it goes through clients. So mm-hmm. Swiss Re, they approached us in London. So we started working for Swiss Re in London, but then they said, you better come to Zurich, because that's where the music plays. And so through the clients, we started in Zurich, and the same mm-hmm. in other countries as well.
Okay.
I think that is obviously we obviously also we've got a very strong board with a very strong network, but I think if clients invite us to come to a different region, then by mm-hmm. always that we do that. That's also how we got into Australia. And in the US, we bought a business, MindSpark, that was based in Santa Monica. And but through that, let's say that merger, we started a very strong foothold in the US.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thanks. So now your turn. Yes.
So, the COVID, the fundraising has become quite challenging, because nowadays the projects and businesses, they can't travel and meet the investors in person, because normally most of the investments and everything used to happen face to face. So what would be your advice to impact projects when they are fundraising online? How can they do it successfully, or how will they do it successfully when they can't travel?
My experience actually is that fundraising hasn't stopped, because obviously I've seen that in the last year and a half, people got so savvy in the way that they used, let's say, Zoom and all the other facilities, and that people very quickly turned themselves to the benefits of that. So it's mm-hmm. much easier to actually, let's say, approach people and meet people because of that. Because obviously mm-hmm. all our commute has been cut down from an hour and a half per day to probably 5 or 7 minutes per day. And that's obviously you much more productive working time. So in my experience over the last year, fundraising has not stopped. People made investments. I'll say that company Econex in Frankfurt, we had a board meeting this morning, and amazing. We've got two new investors coming in with real money. And obviously it's all Zoom-based.
But so they never met in person. This is what I just never met in person, just through Zoom. Okay. So how did they do that? You know, just to share the experience with some rather new project, like how do you fundraise successfully online? What would you say? How should they do that to get the money?
I think it's very simple that you have your strong story, you have a strong presentation, you just be authentic, mm-hmm. and because everybody uses the same tools now, and obviously and then you show, let's say, the portfolio that we have in that particular business, the different yep. organizations that we have invested in, and you explain that based on that portfolio, and then people mm-hmm. They say this is very, very attractive investment proposition. Also, mm-hmm. in Climate Foundation, we had, last year, we had probably our best fundraising year. And it's amazing. And it's all Zoom-based. So in that mm-hmm. sense, it is not, I don't think that we should hide behind the pandemic and all that, mm-hmm. that we can't raise the funds we need to raise. Because there's probably another problem if that is the real issue.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks a lot, Stephen. Yeah. We will definitely forward it to some of our mentorship students.
And now a bit more on a harder topic. So one of the dangers I find is that we are talking about impact investment, sustainable investment. I mean, I have friends who are busy in the field of climate change and everything more than 20, 30 years. But on the ground level, things are getting worse, whether it's about environment, whether it's loss of the biodiversity. And somewhere I was reading a report by one of the ex from Wall Street. He writes that these forms of investments are giving false hopes, plus diverting attention away from the severity of the problem. What would you say to that?
I think a comment like this has a hidden agenda. I don't believe it. Mm-hmm. I see many very positive things. And we estimate that we probably in the next 15 years will trigger about $5 trillion of new climate economy investments. $5 trillion. Mm-hmm. That companies like Volkswagen yep. have changed their business model. They're going to go carbon neutral by 2050. They're going to be carbon neutral before, because their supply chain has to change now, yep. not in 2030. They have to change now. So that their steel.
I love this word now, you know.
the steel industry has to figure out how they can become carbon neutral. And there are already quite a few examples. Even in China, they're trying out steel manufacturing without heavy carbon use, but with hydrogen. And that is then green hydrogen, not blue hydrogen. The same in Sweden. And so I think there are a lot of fantastic opportunities. The same happens with aluminum. There's one of the largest aluminum producers, the Russian business. They're already trialing producing aluminum with green hydrogen. So I think there's a lot that's not being done. And obviously, I always hear from people, God, this costs so much, and this is, and our share price and all this kind of stuff. Yes. Obviously, the capital will move. Yes. We've seen already that the big pension funds, the insurance companies, they have to see where do they actually make their returns in the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know that pension funds have globally close to $50 trillion of assets.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think it's probably 45 or 30, whatever. So obviously, they are really assessing what does the future look like, and mm-hmm. how can we make changes. Systemic change. You have heard most probably that Jeff Bezos has created this Earth Fund with $10, mm-hmm. and he's going to spend $1 billion per year because he wants to spend the $10 billion by 2030. Mm-hmm. And WRI, where I'm on the board, became the recipient of $100 million last year. And obviously, one of the things they're going to do with that is to electrify all school buses in the US. 80,000 school buses will be electrified. And obviously, that creates a lot of jobs, creates a lot of new investment. Yep. And this is really a systemic change. And obviously, then, if private individuals like Jeff Bezos can do this, obviously, governments need to do this, because it's just a no-brainer to electrify your bus fleet, because mm-hmm. your bus fleet, they have a depot from where they start in the morning, and then they do their route, they go back to the mm-hmm. depot, and then they can change their batteries and go on,
yeah.
rather than having dirty diesel. So I think there's so many wonderful opportunities which you can also incorporate into impact investment.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, going back to maybe I'm a bit pessimist about this, that on the ground level, we are still seeing that the CO2 emission has increased quite significantly in the last years. Also, the loss of the forest, the loss of biodiversity is on an ever-increasing speed increasing. So somehow there is a kind of mismatch going on, that there's such amazing project and such amazing initiatives taking place. But it seems either they're too slow or they're still not catching up to the damage which is being caused.
Or too small, maybe.
Yeah. Now, CO2 emissions in 2020 have dramatically been reduced. But that was obviously because of...
COVID. Yeah. But then it again went up.
But it's now going up again because China already has 18% growth in the first 3 months of this year. But obviously, John Kerry has just come back from meetings in Shanghai with his counterparts. And China is a country that actually under-promises and over-delivers. They have cut back their coal-fired power plants pipeline dramatically. They still open new coal-fired power plants, but not as many as they were supposed to. And they're going to open, they're going to start, I think from next year on, they want to build 8 nuclear power plants per year. Okay, Bill Gates argues that actually nuclear is an option that we should not disregard mm-hmm. in this, because he says technology has really improved over the last 50 years. And so I think China knows that. And they're going to definitely move. They're the biggest investor in renewable energy, in wind farms, mm-hmm. solar parks, etc. But obviously, if they also now cut back their coal, let's say, energy situation, which they're doing. And so I think it looks better than most people think it is. But obviously, mm-hmm. Southeast Asia is still an issue. When you see these economies like the Philippines or Indonesia or Vietnam or Thailand, I think a lot needs to be done. And obviously, WRI mm-hmm. is very active on the ground there. To also to work with governments, with civil society, etc., to come up with new solutions, and so I think, but there's so much work being done, I'm actually more positive than negative.
That's good. That's good.
Are you satisfied now? Are we also burning coal behind, or what is that burning behind us?
So. You think?
Stephen, another question, because you've been talking about potential investors, and it's important that many of those financial institutions or pension funds, which are kind of spectators at the moment, that they transform to actors. So what would you say to all of them who are looking at our show? Why should they start acting in this field? And what in general term would be the SWOT analysis, or strengths, weakness, opportunity, and threat of this sector in your opinion?
Which sector? Sorry, say it again. Which
impact
sector?
Impact investing. We are talking about impact investing, of course. So what would you say for investor who is still hesitating to get involved into impact investing? How would you define a SWOT for impact investing? So strengths, weakness, opportunities, and threats in this sector.
I must say, I think the traditional definition of impact investment will change dramatically, because if you see what we just discussed, let's say these amazing investments into new technology, into greening the industries, etc., creating new aviation fuel, which is carbon neutral, all these things, creating actually short-haul aircraft being electric, all this stuff, and Airbus is already testing that. And so I think these are investment opportunities that I see very much as, let's say, the next phase of impact investing. So there's mm-hmm. a much bigger impact that, for instance, when I joined the European Climate Foundation in 2016 as a board member, And then in 2017, I think we had the diesel scandal in the US.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And obviously, basically, the European Climate Foundation and others, we funded the organizations who did all that research to figure out whether diesel would be an acceptable solution for the US. But obviously, we did not expect that we came up with Dieselgate, with the cheating situation. So what happened from that time on, this systemic change happened. And then I thought, God, my impact investment journey, how big is the impact that we are now seeing in that industry compared to the impact that I've achieved in my 15 years of impact investment? So as I said, obviously, I'm not saying that the impact wasn't big enough, but okay, now you suddenly see really industrial systemic changes, which make a phenomenal difference. And I think these are the markets that investors, the big institutional investors, should look at. And as I said before, BP and Shell and Exxon and these people, obviously they see that the capital moves away from them, because very clearly that is not the future. And oil consumption will continue to go down, because eventually when all major markets in the Western world say by 2025, no more combustion engines, what does it mean?
Sorry.
So I think the
just the confirmation, you know, in Russia we say if someone makes up tea after someone said something, it's just the confirmation of your statement. So.
My next question would be that you have quite a vast experience in this sector and also knowledge. So can you say some good and some not so good experiences of the business and projects which are busy in solving SDGs or which are busy in working at SDGs?
Oh, that's difficult.
Yeah, practical examples are always so important, you know, because then we see really what is impact, what is not, and like it's and always
what,
great to
what
hear some
goes stuff. Good or what went wrong, or where the business people should have paid more attention to.
Yeah, I think if you look at the impact report of responsibility, they classify all their different investments according to the SDGs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly what, but okay, this is, I think it is very interesting how they do that. If I look at my company Econext in Frankfurt, we have an organization called Screen 17. And that is a tool where we work with banks, with asset managers, with insurance companies to assess their asset allocation according to the SDGs, the 17 SDGs. I think which makes a lot of sense, specifically for pension funds, that they know how do they work in that space of SDGs. So there's all these new technologies coming up, which really make it easier for fund managers to let's say plan their next investment phase when they have those tools and responsibility. In the last year and a half, they have invested, I think, over $1.5 billion. Into climate finance. So yeah. These are serious figures. Okay, obviously compared to for a private business, I think that is pretty impressive.
Exactly.
Shall we move to Wall Street?
Yeah, exactly.
You want to take that one or should I go? I like those guys, you know, from Wall Street. Maybe you've heard they are now setting up or already set up a new slogan, which is green is good. Before it was greed is good, and now it is green, which is good. So the question to you, aren't you worried that this will divert money away from real impactful project into vague structured and financial products, which will only be meant to maximize profit with greenwashed underlying projects? So this we can cause again double damage. One side is reputation of impact investing is at stake. And of course, such bubbles like subprime crisis-like, but caused with a good purpose now and on being good and green.
No, I think that is very fair comment. if you look at the big boys, the Black Rocks, the Blackstones, and these guys, and who say that they're going to go heavy into impact investment, which I don't believe it is really the case. And because obviously it doesn't mean then when the boss says something that the people who do the work that they actually will follow. And because obviously they rely on the bonus, and that's the whole bonus philosophy that the potentially plays against this type of, let's say, approach. And I think eventually the new generation will not accept that anymore. So they will want to work for a company with a strong purpose. And many of these companies have as purpose shareholder value and not stakeholder value. And I think are terms which really have to be scrutinized very much. And so I think that is right, that there's probably a lot of greenwashing going on at this moment. And that's why we are trying to get a roundtable organized in the Vatican. One of the organizations we work in quite closely with through the European Climate Foundation. Because we want then to get the big boys of the finance industries together and talk about these issues. You know, how true are these people to their words? How can they mobilize the thousands of middle managers in the way that they actually do the work in regards how they should be working and not just profit maximization.
Exactly.
I mean, as an ex-banker, I can confirm that many of my colleagues are purely bonus-driven. You know, they can sell you anything, and it's all about the bonus, you know, and numbers at the end of the year. So it's we need to put another motivation for them to work and think in different ways.
So before we go to the next point, that will be more about the European Climate Foundation. The last question I wanted to ask is if to our audience who are young students who have finished their education, who are looking to start a business, or SMEs or young entrepreneurs who want to do something in the field of SDGs, or who want to get active and create a business in SDGs, what would be your advice to them?
Where to start? Because, you know, just talking from my experience again, when I wanted to get into this sector, there were not enough jobs, you know, and still there are not enough jobs in impact investing sector, especially when you are young, it's quite difficult to get in. So how would you advise them to get into this sector if they want to? And what Ben said.
Because a lot of this program is also live broadcast in a lot of universities. So what would be your advice to the students who are finishing their studies? Why should they get involved in this sector?
I think if you just roll out of university, I think my advice would be to first, if you're interested in the financial sector, get a job in the financial sector, get some experience, and really understand as an analyst how that works and how challenging that is. And then I think once you've done that for a couple of years, then you have the tools and the understanding of potentially moving then into impact investment funds. And there are many, many around. And I've seen that you now, in the last 6-7 years, that most impact investment funds have really created or recruited A-class people. Mm-hmm. And the beginning of that industry was not the case. You got B or C-class people.
Right.
Yeah.
And obviously, and then you're not competing like for like. So I think, but I think my advice would be first gain some experience yourself to go into that tough world of
to smell some profit only and profit driven enterprises.
Yeah, but okay. There are other, let's say, I'm going to be on the panel with Barclays next week. And we had sort of a prep talk this morning. And obviously, they're talking a different language. We worked through one of our organizations.
Definitely trying to see Stephen.
We worked with one of our organizations called Share Action to put Barclays under pressure, because Barclays was till last year the largest funder of fossil fuel companies across Europe.
Right.
And we make, or Share Action, who we're funding, pushed them that they've changed their mind, they've changed their direction. So I think that is what. And and obviously, but that has to filter through an organization like Barclays or JP Morgan or HSBC, etc. But so it has to, that takes time to filter that through. But okay, the new generation, they're much more receptive for this than let's say the 40 plusers who were, who get their bonus every year and who have their lifestyle based on the bonus culture they were growing up in.
Exactly. And now we move over to ECF, to the European Climate Foundation.
Let's do.
So what is, at this moment, your opinion on the situation of the climate, and what can people do, everybody, all normal people, to support climate action?
I think people have to understand what their own personal responsibility is in that space. You know, we always think, usually people move it up to government level, you know, government should do this and shouldn't do that and stuff, or to the corporate level, or to the, but many, many times, and I think for us, obviously the climate crisis is a global crisis, but it's also a very local crisis, you know, and we see it for ourselves, you know, and so, but how, what are our own actions in regards of mitigate some of the climate. So where do we start? For instance, recycling. Do we actually properly recycle things that we throw away? And how do we consume, you know? Do we, for instance, there are now supermarkets, like Iceland is a UK-based supermarket. They said by 2025, they want to get, maybe earlier, 2023, they want to get rid of all the plastic in their product ranges.
Perfect.
We are discussing it almost every day, you know. Even bioproducts here in Switzerland, it's all wrapped in plastic. It's awful, you know. And you have bad consciousness that there are not enough shops with zero waste and zero packaging.
Yeah. So basically, we as consumers have a voice. So we can actually make our voice heard. And I think, but it should start at home. So look at your own fridge. Mm-hmm. How much plastic is in the fridge, you know? But plastic per definition is not bad. Plastic is actually very good because for hygiene and all these things. So we don't need plastic. But the point is that we don't recycle it well enough. And that it also ends up in rivers and then eventually in the oceans and stuff. And I think that's the personal responsibility that everybody has. You know, how do we commute? You know, obviously now with the pandemic, nobody wants to take the train anymore, and everybody goes into their own car because they think they're safe. Then suddenly you create another problem that emissions go up because everybody sits in the car, but obviously the trains are still running. So I think that there's a way, but the business travel obviously is changing dramatically because obviously I haven't been flying since over a year. You know, and usually I was probably twice a week I was on a plane, you know, and so that has totally changed. And that will stay more or less. Not exactly the same, but okay, there will be much less travel. And we are now all used to do Zooming or Teams or what have you. And so I think that becomes the new normal. So, but as I said, it's we should look into the mirror. How do we live? How do we consume? Mm-hmm. How do we travel? And what can we change?
Exactly.
You're definitely speaking our language, Stefan. You know?
You mean Russian?
Also, I mean, yeah, we can switch to Russian if everyone is okay to that, or keep speaking English. The next questions are a little bit not the same, but some of them are repetitive. The same we asked Dr. Erwin from United Nations Development Program last week, but we'd like to hear your opinion on that. This is why we will ask you some questions.
Because of your role from the ECF, from the European Climate Foundation.
To have different opinions. So you want to start? Yeah.
So there has been a couple of treaties signed also in the past on the matter of climate change. in 1992, 154 countries, they signed the UNFCC, where the government promised to reduce concentration of greenhouse gas with the goal of preventing dangerous man-made interference with Earth's climate system. Also, but we found out that none of the points mentioned in the agreement had been kept. And in fact, the emissions have increased incredibly since then, including the destruction of the biodiversity. So what is your opinion of the chance of success of the Paris Agreement?
That was a response. Should we take it as a response?
I think at least we know what we have to do. Mm-hmm. Like Greta Thunberg says, you know, our house is on fire. We know what we have to do. We know that we have to listen to the scientists. And we've seen through the pandemic that suddenly everything came to a halt. So we could see the stars. We could listen to the birds. We could enjoy clean air. And I think that is a sign that people really will, I hope that they will remember that we actually suddenly had a very amazing way of experience life in a new way. But obviously, it's true. That's obviously the agreement. Now, next week, obviously, is a very important milestone when we have this big climate summit in Washington with over 40 countries attending virtually. And then we hope that the U.S. will make very stringent announcements in regards of their own emissions going forward. And we believe that they will make an announcement that they say they want to cut the emissions by 50% by 2030, which obviously would be an amazing achievement.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah. And so I think that's most probably something of that sort is going to happen. Obviously, John Kerry was in Shanghai this week. Obviously, he had similar discussions with let's say his counterparts there. And so I think, will we really reach the 1.5 degree by 2030? I don't believe we will. Mm-hmm. I think we will still be closer to 2 degrees. But I think the awareness is there. The awareness and the understanding and the urgency is there. Today is a climate meeting between Macron, Angela Merkel, and also President Xi from China. So I think this 5 years, 7 years, 6 years ago, that hasn't happened. So I think that people independently from each other talk about these things. And if you look at what happens in Germany, particularly in the automobile industry, it's a very, very strong lobby. But they now also have woken up to that, as I said earlier, they have to change. One of my board members of the European Climate Foundation, she's on the sustainability board of Volkswagen. And she says it's amazing. She's been there now since 3 years, and it has totally changed. The action has changed. The discussions have changed. The actions have changed. And she says it's remarkable to see a shift in an organization of that sort. And Volkswagen is still the largest car manufacturer in the world. So that has massive implications for everybody. And so does that mean that we reach the targets of the climate of the Paris Agreement? As I said, I don't think we will reach them as they were, let's say, set out. But I think we're going to go further than in any other climate, let's say, conference before.
That's positive to hear. Because you mentioned US, and that's also because we had the election in US where Joe Biden came. Then we recently had the election in Greenland. And this has given quite a strong wind in the back of the climate action. But we also know from our experience of the last 4 or 5 years, the weakness of fragile democracies. So, and especially because President Biden is using a lot of presidential power to push through these laws. What would happen if, for example, Trump is back in 4 years?
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. that's the weakness of our fragile democracies. And that can also happen here in Europe.
I know. And I think Biden and his team, they have 2 years now to really do work.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's always the problem in that American system, because then you got the midterm elections and you suddenly then start already with the next presidential campaign.
Yeah.
And so I think if he really can get the things that they're set out to do within the next 2 years, then mm-hmm. I think the chance of let's say moving to next term, and whether he will then step down and let Kamala Harris take over, I don't know. But I think it is so crucial. It's so crucial. And I think everybody appreciates that.
Okay. And you also mentioned very often about private investors or investments. So what is your opinion that can the private investors and investments make the difference?
Well, definitely. But how do you call private investors? Institutional investors are private investors. So if you talk to the pension funds, the insurance companies, and these guys, but also you've got the asset managers and like BlackRock and these people. So obviously they definitely can make a difference. But again, the culture of these organizations has to be looked at. So they can't just look, as we said before, at shareholder value. They have to also look at stakeholder value. So the new normal rather than the old normal.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can I ask you more it's not fun question, but let's imagine. I hope you've seen the movie The Day After Tomorrow. Have you? It's about extreme climate change, back to ice age, which happens just in 8 days, right? And of course, this film received mixed reviews, some critics about numeric scientific inaccuracies. However, the most scenarios of climate predictions are built on average out of extreme temperatures, right? So how probable do you see such Armageddon event happening indeed? So we go... So it's completely shifted very quickly.
But I'd like to add that there was a scientific report at WEF last month where quite similar predictions were made by scientists that if there is a abrupt change, then the change will not... So we are not talking about increase of sea level of 20 to 50 centimeters by the end of the century. It can happen 30, 40 meters within a couple of weeks and it will be unstoppable. This was a report at the WEF last month. So these kind of events, the scientists are predicting. Mm. So what do you think about that?
It's horrible. I don't think about that. if you look at the time, let's say over millions of years, when we had ice age, when we had the heat waves and stuff, obviously that was all gradual. And I can't really comment on that, whether that is... I haven't seen that report, and obviously whether this is realistic or not. Obviously, but we see these massive hurricanes, last year was the biggest hurricane season, you know. And so we probably have more coming this year, because they say that this summer is going to be even hotter than last year's summer. So, it's hot, but it's not cold. So that's...
Exactly. I mean, here also the weather is changing nonstop.
We had like winter, spring. It's extremely quick, the changes of the temperature. But maybe, Stephen, watch this movie The Day After Tomorrow. I would love to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, from Dr. Ekins from UCLA, he wrote a report. If you want, I can send it to you by email later on.
Okay.
Where he mentioned that no government in the world, including each and every country of European Union, is yet close to a policy architecture in line with the Paris Agreement goals. So you are from ECF, from European Climate Foundation. You must be aware of this.
Yeah, we are very much aware of this. And obviously that is exactly the topic that is happening next week at DC. Because people from WRI and also from the ECF are part of the Biden administration now. And obviously, we're very much working with them to get sort of NDCs from different countries and that they make these commitments.
NDC? But what is an NDC?
This is National Development Goals, and what they're called. So how much emissions they want to cut by 2030, 2040, 2050.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen enough yet, But this is exactly what everybody's working on, to get these let's say these agreements done. And obviously that has to be. There's another preparation meeting I think now in June for the COP26, because it might happen that the COP in Glasgow will be moved.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about this, because obviously I think the Scottish government is very worried that suddenly thousands of people are arriving in Glasgow. And then they have to sit in these meetings, and the weather's poor. It's November. It's cold. It's miserable, and you can't open the windows. And you sit in these heated rooms, you know. And this is like sounds like a super spreader. So, but people don't want to. Alex Sharma doesn't want a virtual meeting. He wants a face-to-face meeting. Anyway, but it's true. So I'm very worried about this, but obviously. There are many, many levers in this, and hopefully we get some positive answers next week.
Mm-hmm. That would be perfect.
Mm-hmm. Going to agriculture, which is quite important for us, and so we were told by a very learned person that not only is food industry one of the largest CO2 emitter, if not the largest one, but the meat is the single biggest cause of unhealthy planet, body, and mind. For example, cattle and vegetable oil production is the main reason for destruction of the Amazon. So what is your personal opinion on that, as well as opinion as an investor?
Yeah, I think this is very true. Bolsonaro has sent a letter to Biden about Amazon that he wants to, let's say, stop illegal logging by 2030. But then he also... 30.
Oh my gosh.
Will there be any Amazon left by then?
10 years.
And so, but then also the request was also for $1 billion to help to achieve that. And we had 2 weeks ago had a very interesting discussion with the new British ambassador to Brasilia about one of my colleagues from Brazil about the issues of the Bolsonaro regime, etc., about the climate crisis in Brazil, the pandemic in Brazil. You know, it is a really, really a very, very bleak picture.
Yeah.
So I think all the diplomatic corps, the Germans, the Americans, the Brits, they're working flat out with ministers of the administration of Bolsonaro to move them in the way that they operate. I think there's a lot of pressure. And also Peter Wilson, the British ambassador, also said, you know, he's also very much working on a trade agreement between the UK and Brazil. But he said one of the key issues is the climate. So we won't have a new trade deal if we don't get a very strong point in regards of the Amazon and on the total climate policies of the Bolsonaro administration. So there's a lot of pressure what that is concerned. In regards of agriculture, yeah, that's true. And but you have to see what type of agriculture. You know, if you look at cattle agriculture, so one of the big issues is methane that cows disperse. But methane is obviously three times as let's say as intense than carbon emissions.
Yeah, exactly.
But this integrates much faster. So in that sense, obviously, CO2 stays in the atmosphere for millions of years. So methane stays very short and then disintegrates. So in that sense, there's a different, but it's still a true problem. And how can you reduce the meat consumption? You know, obviously, who are the big meat eaters? Obviously, the US is a big meat eater, the South America, and in particular China, you know, and so that won't change overnight. Technologies of how to produce sustainable meat, obviously, is very important. And obviously, now you've got new companies coming up who produce protein meat, which tastes like meat, but it's made from plants. Yep. And Bill Gates spoke about this in his book as well, and he invested in a couple of these. But for us, it's also, we are now just starting as well in the ECF, we're starting a new program on land use and forestry and agriculture, because we see it as a key issue, and for many, many countries. And if you drive through Holland, you mm-hmm. see miles of how you call it, mice?
Maize.
Yeah, how you call that?
Maize, corn?
Corn.
Corn, yeah. You corn. See miles and miles of corn fields in Holland.
But it's not for human consumption.
No, it's not for human consumption. It's for animal consumption. And I think that is actually, it's horrible. You know, the landscape is just totally changed because it's all corn production, all corn is grown there. Mm-hmm. So what is the same applies for Germany as well, you know, and how much they feed their animals. Anyway, it's a big issue.
For me, it's like we put this third component in between, like animals eat food and then we eat animals, right? But we could just eat what the animals eat, actually. Then we would need to eat animals as well. So the question I ask almost every guest, are you a meat eater? Are you a vegetarian? Yeah.
I'm a meat eater and I enjoy my meat. But I know that here in the UK, the meat that we buy is very, very well produced, because because if you have the circle so that you've got the cow or the sheep on grassland, you know, and feeding there, and then obviously also the methane of the cows is absorbed by the grass, you know, so this is a circle, you know. But if you have cattle in farms and they're not going out and they're being fed grain, that's a different story. So, and that is in many, many countries that is the case, that actually in summer cattle is just indoors, which is
It's awful. I mean, we also, I know it from, because I've grown up in a village, you know, we had seen the cows running around everywhere. But my curiosity is the following now. So if we would transform all our cows holding like that, would we reduce enough CO2 emissions because of this meat production? All the cattle would be just like you, Stephen, saying, held like that, without this artificial holding them inside, would we still generate a lot of CO2 emissions or not? Or maybe we should become all vegetarians, then it would have even a bigger impact. So.
What I wanted to add here is that there was a report in Netherlands, there's a newspaper called Volkskrant, you must be knowing it.
Yeah.
There was a report last week which said that meat industry and soya product industry is the biggest reason of deforestation, especially the old forest.
Yeah.
And to add to it, 30% of this, including the Amazon, is being funded by Europeans.
Yeah.
European Pension Fund and everybody are funding these companies which are destroying the forests for meat production and for soya products production. So in this case, the meat has double value. One is that because of the meat, we are destroying the forest, and the meat itself is, like you mentioned, creating methane or CO2. But the other side of the issue is that the forest, being a carbon capture, it is becoming a carbon emitter. Because we are burning the forest.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Thanks for confirming it with statistics.
but did you read this report? Otherwise, I can send it to you. It was in the Volkskrant.
No, I haven't. Last week. That, so. You can send it. It's nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the next question, also on your topic.
Yes.
So you must be aware that in Netherlands, Spain, Germany, New Zealand, and also in Canada, there is a discussion, there's a strong initiative for the meat tax. And one of our friends said, that was the head of UNDP who came to our, said that natural asset is the biggest asset in the world to which no asset managers is paying attention to. So what is your opinion on this?
So what do you mean with natural asset?
Water, forest, land, everything that the nature is providing us.
So it's about this. We are disconnected from nature. You know, everything what the planet gives us, basically, we are misusing, over-consuming, destroying. So, and asset managers are also not paying attention to that.
So, we are not putting values to this natural. So that's exactly the meat tax initiative which is going on in Netherlands and in Germany is about putting the value of the natural assets as a tax. So, for example, when you produce a kilo of meat, how much land has been used, how much water has been used, that value would be added to the product.
I think I'm just thinking of one issue here, which is education.
Yeah.
And I'm doing some work with a gentleman, a good friend.
What is it called? The project?
The Harmony Project.
Okay.
Harmony Project. So he's actually a headmaster from a primary school, and he's about 8 years ago, Prince Charles was a co-author of a book called Harmony, and where he describes actually nature and how nature is so important to our lives, etc. But as we are mismanaging nature, so we don't see nature as an asset. But we just see it as an asset that we can strip, and but not a positive asset. And so Richard has actually written this teacher's guide, where he says a new way of looking at and learning about our world. And he works closely with Tim Smith from the Eden Project, which you might know here in Cornwall. Yep. And Prince Charles actually wrote here the foreword.
Wow.
And so I think in all these issues, you know, it is our responsibility to give our kids the best chance of learning about nature, learning about their own responsibility and the way that they should conduct their life and really live their lives. And I think that is one way of doing it, through having a good curriculum as a teacher's guide, to give them an incentive to discuss with their kids their responsibility and the way that they should look at nature. And so I think that is so important that we actually encourage our education system to get much more involved. A good friend of mine, Satish Kumar, he's an Indian philosopher and sociologist, etc. He lives in North Devon, and he talks about this a lot. That he says nature is, we don't see nature as the value it is. We only see nature the way that we can use it for us, but we should live in harmony with nature. And I think that is so important. And again, also like what Pope Francis said in Laudato Si, it's the same message, you know. We are responsible. We have our own responsibility. And as we said earlier, so how can we as individuals be more receptive and more responsible? And I think these are all things that hang together. And I think that is, that makes a lot of sense, but it takes time. Commitment to do these things.
Exactly.
Stephen, may I ask you to share something with our audience, some personal experience which not everyone knows? Something maybe funny, something that people don't know about you, because we ask our guests to share something personal. So your story, something about your story and journey where we can learn also.
Yeah, got there are many stories, but obviously one is maybe when I have a new grandchild,
how many have you? When I have
17.
Wow, that's impressive. Wow, that's amazing.
Then I write little stories for each grandchild. And the last one I wrote was this one.
We can't see.
We can't Tommy.
Tommy and Greta. Okay. Uh-huh. What's about?
So Tommy is my character. I've created that now. He's in every story, and he has all kinds of different adventures that he carries on. So every grandchild has a little book like this, and you see here all the different.
Are you drawing also then?
No, I've got a young lady in London who does all the illustrations.
Okay. Ah. That's great. But it's only for your grandchildren, you know? It's not available for public, is it?
No, I have a website.
Okay.
It's called
www.thetommystories.com.
Mm-hmm. Thetommystories.com in one word.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's look interesting. But with 17 grandchildren, I mean, it's like an army of impact, future impact investors and, highly engaged leaders. Exactly.
The oldest is 8.
Wow. Oldest is 8.
Oldest is 8 only. Wow. Uh-huh. So did you ever have them at the same time, all of them?
Obviously not the last year, because obviously we can't see each other. We can only Zoom.
But yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. I hope probably at the end of this year that will be possible again.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they also don't live all in the UK. They live also abroad. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing it with us, Stephen. We will definitely check the story
page. Exactly. And now we will read it also. Mm-hmm. So thank you very, very much for your time, Stephen, and for the extremely great meeting. And if you, do you have anything, conclusion to say for the audience on this sector? In the sector of impact, business, funding, finance, investment?
Yeah, maybe a quote. Mm-hmm. Our world is beset by disquiet and uncertainty, and it has frozen us into inaction. Yet there is a powerful solution within our grasp, impact. So impact is actually the solution that we should use to overcome disquiet and uncertainty and inaction. And I think that is something that we should consider.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Stephen. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you so very much.
It was a pleasure. Pleasure talking to you today. And yes, hope to see you also online, not online, offline again.
Yeah, it would be nice. Hope so.
Yeah, thank you then.
Be great.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, he was going to say something.
Yeah, so would you say then who is coming next week? Because I think we have very interesting guests from your country.
That is question, because so next week we have a guest, Dr. Gurminder Singh Khalsa, who is not only a famous investor from the Silicon Valley, but also a forerunner and founder of many world-famous initiatives in the field of technology and climate change. And he has been busy in this field, I think, since the 1960s. So that will be our guest next week.
And I think a little secret, he is also the founder of Yogi Tea.
I don't know how many people know Yogi Tea.
I think it's all over Europe. So I even have a friend who said, oh, really? So I should definitely join. But he is a very interesting person. Don't miss it and join us next Friday. Act with impact. I think I have nothing else to say today.
Exactly. Bye for now.
Bye, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjee's. I'm Svetlana.
And I'm Ben.
In season 2, we will be traveling around the globe, out of Switzerland, and bring amazing leaders from businesses, thought leaders, political leaders, of course, investors and experts.
We're working at implementing and realizing all the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, better known as SDGs.
And they are also making profit.
Hello. I am Amina Gurifakim, and I'm the 6th president of the Republic of Mauritius.
My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist, and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation.
I'm Michael Dichtenstein. I'm an entrepreneur here in Dichtenstein. I'm running on one side financial services, a company.
You know, hundreds of deals a month, we are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing.
So join us to discover impact investing ecosystem.
See you every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time at Swiss Impact with Benedict.
See you on Friday. Act with impact.